So I'm going to talk with you today about evaluating Descent model performance, estimating soil carbon and nitrous oxide emissions in South Central Brazilian sugarcane production systems. This is a collaborative effort between a few of us in my advisor, Dr. Keith Poshian's lab at Colorado State University, as well as researchers at SENA and Azalki, two institutions in Piracicaba, Brazil, and at Shell Global Solutions. So many thanks to my co-authors that are listed here. We're interested in Brazilian sugarcane because it's really a major player in a rapidly expanding global bioenergy industry. Sugarcane is highly productive. It has a very high energy yield when it's used as sugarcane. And in Brazil, it's been grown on a large scale and used for bioenergy for many decades. Crop-based biofuels are of interest on a global scale for several reasons, including its use as a renewable liquid fuel source, as well as a component of climate change mitigation strategy. In Brazil, sugarcane is really seen as having high potential of helping to meet this increasing global demand, which as of 2013 was about 83.1 billion liters of ethanol, and given mandates across 27 countries, is estimated to increase almost 60% up to 138.8 billion liters by 2021. So within this context, Brazilian sugarcane land area is expected to continue to expand. This expansion has been going on for many decades. This is a figure showing the expansion from 1958 through 2008 with an increase in land area from 1 million hectares up to 7 million hectares. Now looking ahead, as of 2013, it's already up to about 9.7 million hectares. And with these mandates, there's anything from an additional 6 million hectares to, you know, up to 25 million hectares plus of additional land that might be needed to meet this increasing global demand. So the big question is really, where is this expansion going to occur in Brazil, and how is sugarcane going to be produced in a sustainable way? Within this context, ecosystem models are an important tool for sustainability assessment. They can be used to explore land use change scenarios. So for example, from that previous slide, the conversion, the intensification of cattle production on pasture to free up land that can then be converted into sugarcane. It also allows you to evaluate management impacts on ecosystem properties such as soil carbon, plant production, and greenhouse gas emissions, and doing that on a larger temporal and spatial scale than is generally possible by doing experimental work alone. There has been some work done already on modeling sugarcane systems. In Brazil, a lot of that has been focused on modeling soil carbon, in particular looking at the conversion from the traditional harvest of burning sugarcane and then manually harvesting to not burning the system and using mechanized harvest, as well as different types of fertilizer and residue management practices. There's also been some work done on simulating energy cane in Florida, looking at soil carbon and greenhouse gas emissions, in particular that land conversion from pasture into energy cane. Our focus is looking at greenhouse gas production and how that is impacted by different types of Brazilian sugarcane systems. This is really kind of a missing piece of the puzzle where there's been a lot of focus on soil carbon, but in terms of getting that full perspective, the greenhouse gas emissions is an important piece. So one of the questions that we're addressing, how do greenhouse gas emissions change when land is converted into sugarcane production in the sort of main sugarcane producing area of South Central Brazil? How do management practices affect greenhouse gas emissions, and how do these factors interact with each other? And then doing a comparison of model simulations versus IPCC estimates, basically to see, can the model do better? We are using the Descent model. It's a widely used process-based ecosystem model looking at plant-soil interactions that determine the cycling of nitrogen and carbon in particular. It's a highly versatile model. It's been used to simulate many different crops against many different areas of the globe. And it differs from its predecessor, Century, in that it works on a daily time step. It uses daily precipitation and temperature data. It simulates water flow across soil layers and therefore allows you to simulate the greenhouse gas emissions from different plant-soil interactions. This is a basic schematic of the Descent model. It just has sort of some key components of the model, and to help understand kind of what's going on here, basically that's the component that grows a plant. Parts of the plant then die and move into the litter pool, which then moves into the soils and gets processed with some key drivers of temperature and moisture, as well as nitrogen in the system. with the emission of various trace gases. And I wanted to just pause here for a moment to make a note that ammonium volatilization is not yet included in DACENT, but it's work that's ongoing currently. Actually, Rahm is sitting back there in the audience. He'll be giving a presentation tomorrow, 248-3, if anyone's interested in learning more about that piece of the DACENT model. A big part of what we're doing is parameterizing how DACENT grows sugarcane. And there are basically two different approaches, two different submodels, where you can either grow a plant as a grass or a crop, or you can grow it as a tree. And the difference is really in the number of pools that are used to simulate plant growth across the growing season. So if you're talking about a grass or a tree, it's basically one above-ground live pool and a couple of different below-ground pools. If you're simulating as a tree, you have three above-ground pools, leaves, branches, and large wood, and also several different below-ground pools. I'm really going to emphasize the above-ground pools in my talk today. Now, despite the fact that sugarcane is a grass, we've actually had a lot more success using the tree submodel within DACENT to simulate its pattern of growth. So using the leaves component to simulate the leaves, using the branch component of the tree submodel to simulate the tops of the sugarcane, and using the large wood component to simulate the stalks. I wanted to make a note here that I'm going to reference sugarcane trash later on in the talk. That's the combination of the leaves and the tops, basically the material that's left over on the ground after mechanized harvesting when the sugarcane isn't burnt before it's harvested, essentially. We are working on parameterizing the model using a review, as well as working with actual field researchers to accumulate production, soil carbon, and greenhouse gas data. This is a figure just to show where sugarcane production is concentrated in Brazil. That would be the red regions that are marked on this figure here. And while there is some production that's occurring up in that northern area, we're really focused on the south central region, which is providing the vast majority of the sugarcane production currently. This is a little bit out of date from 2008, so that land area has expanded, but it's still concentrated in that region. These are the sites where we've accumulated enough data to model. Black is for soil carbon, red points are greenhouse gas emissions, and blue are plant production data that we've accumulated. Unfortunately, we don't have any one single site that has all of the parameterization data that we would want. So what we have decided is to begin our parameterization process with regionally clustered data on soil carbon, greenhouse gas emissions, and plant production. They're all within about 80 kilometers of each other with some overlap in soil texture as the data that we're working with currently. Just as an additional note, the soil carbon data was from one of the co-authors on this project, Francisco Mello, and that group published a paper in Nature Climate Change recently, where he basically went out and sampled 135 different sites, putting together 75 comparison pairs of land conversion from pasture, agricultural, and native vegetation into sugarcane across different time periods to estimate this payback time for soil carbon. We're also working with Adriana Silva. She's also on this project. She put together century simulations for these sites, so we'll actually be able to do a DACENT century comparison. And then when we kind of distilled everything down to what was available to model in DACENT, we ended up with 75 of these sites and 40 of the comparison pairs to work with and add that greenhouse gas piece to the soil carbon direct measurements. Some preliminary results. So I'm going to start with the production side. This figure here is showing one complete production cycle, the plant year, and four ratoon years of sugarcane production. The lines are the measured results. The lines are the modeled results. The points are the measured results at harvest, showing above ground carbon accumulation in different plant components. Black is total carbon in this figure, blue is the stalk, and orange is the trash. And what you can see here is we're getting an overestimation in total biomass production within the model that's largely driven by an overestimation in how much stock is being grown, but it's actually doing a reasonable job with estimating trash production. It's capturing this low production yield that you can see in the measured data. It's simulating a pretty reasonable job with the carbon to nitrogen ratio of the trash that's going back to the soil, measured at about 100. We're modeling at about 85 to 95. It's also capturing the decline in production over ratoon years, which is why sugarcane has to be replanted, every sort of 3 to 7 years. However, even though it's doing trash simulations pretty well in terms of above-ground production, when you actually look into those two components that I mentioned earlier, the tops versus the leaves, while we are getting the total amount correct, we actually are overestimating the top production and underestimating the leaves. So this is some additional adjustment with our parameters to kind of flip those two around. In terms of soil carbon, I mentioned earlier that our soil carbon measurements are from these land conversion sites. And just to kind of show you, these are two of the 40 pairs that we're able to simulate in Daysend, showing conversion from native vegetation into pasture in 1970 with these two sites, and then one of those then being converted into sugarcane as of 1994, versus the second pair that was converted from native vegetation in 1980, and then one of those sites converted into sugarcane in 2007. So the sites have slight differences in soil texture, but they were under this. They are selected because of their proximity, their similarity in land management up until that time period. And what we're seeing in the model results, so what we have here, I'm sorry that the lines are a little bit thin, but the black lines are showing continuous pasture sites. The red line is showing the sites that are converted into sugarcane at that time period where the arrows are pointing. And what you can see is that with soil carbon, we're getting kind of the correct trends in terms of, you know, estimating which site should have higher carbon than the other, but kind of variable in terms of accuracy. So there's definitely some additional work to be done here, and that will be affected by our work with parameterizing the production side. And then, of course, getting to greenhouse gas emissions. This is what we're really trying to get at with this work. And we're having some sort of interesting model behavior. This is an experiment where greenhouse gas emissions were measured with different levels of residue return after harvest. So from 0 megagrams per hectare of residue of 7, 14, and 21 megagrams per hectare of residue returned. And we are currently working with either extreme, the 0 and the 21 megagrams per hectare, as well as the control site. And what we're seeing here, so the model results of annual N2O emissions are across the bottom. The y-axis has the measured N2O annual emissions. And you can see, actually, for the control site and the zero residue return, you're actually seeing excellent model performance in estimating annual N2O emissions. However, in the measured values, they saw higher N2O emissions with higher residue return, in particular when it was combined with the application of vinasse, which is a liquid byproduct of ethanol production, high in organic matter, high in nutrients. So what we think is going on is that the model is having high immobilization due to that high C-to-N ratio of the trash returning to the system and isn't stimulating enough denitrification. And so that's something that we're working on to see if we can improve model performance with that. This is showing daily greenhouse gas flux. The red line is showing modeled results on a daily basis for N2O emissions. The green points are the measured values. Below that, we have the air temperature across that time period, water-filled pore space, and precipitation. And what you can see here is typically what we've seen when we're using a Daysend model to look at N2O emissions tends to do better modeling annual versus daily emissions. However, in this particular site where it's doing well modeling total annual emissions, which is the zero residue return site, we actually see decent model performance where you are capturing some of the peaks, you're capturing some of the timing, but it's hard to tell because the data are sparse. We have a lot more greenhouse gas data that we are going to be bringing into this process. So this is something that, you know, we're glad to see this, but, you know, there's a lot more to know if this is an actual good performance or whether there's, I suspect, going to be variable performance as we move forward. So our next steps, going to finish parameterizing at the site level, validate the model across the broader sugarcane producing region, estimate greenhouse gas impact of land conversion into sugarcane from those soil carbon land conversion sites I mentioned earlier, as well as looking at the impact of different types of management practices, and finally doing a comparison of estimates against IPCC approaches for the same locations and practices. I wanted to acknowledge Dr. Bill Parton and Steve Williams and their help with the parameterization work that we've done thus far, as well as Nicole Echevarria, Ian Blackburn, and Barbara Fricks for their help in developing these model simulations and working with the data. And then a big thank you to our funding support from Shell Global Solutions. Any questions?
Okay. Some questions?
Yes, please.
You talk about the variation of the core region and how can you tell us more how you plan to validate the model?
Yes, so the data that we're using so far is just in that concentrated located set. So the validation will occur on that. So that figure showing, I can go back. Sorry, I have many. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so the validation will be simulating using all the data we have available, as well as some additional data from the researchers in Brazil that we're working with. They're currently collecting. They have an eddy flux tower that just went in, as well as they've been taking continuous measurements of N2O and methane emissions using automatic chambers on different sites that are at different stages of the crop cycle. And so we have a big data set that we can then do a broader validation work on. Thank you. Yes.
I'm confused that all your model calibration, model calibration.
Yeah, the parameterization.
The parameterization.
Yes.
What method are you calibrating the model? Your method.
Well, at the moment, we're just getting started with this process. The JSNET model is particularly sensitive to production, and so we're starting with making sure that we can. This is really our starting point. Are we doing a good job with modeling the different production components? And then once we've sort of fine-tuned that, then we'll go more into some sort of more mathematically based model estimation and calibration. But this is just sort of a qualitative starting point to make sure that we're even in the right ballpark. So we're really, it's the beginning of the process. We've done a lot of work in setting up the model simulations, and we're just sort of digging into the data and getting work with the calibration. Yeah, thank you for your question.
Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you.